Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Extra. My name's Mick Coyle. Jake Mills is in the studio. The Mental Health Monday podcast available to listen and download. That's exactly what Jake Mills has done with Daniel Lewis's story on the programme this week. It was quite something, wasn't it, Daniel's story?
It was. It was, yeah, it was. It was, well, when I came in, I said this, and it doesn't mean to do it any injustice, but it was a heavy one. It was, when it started, it was quite, I thought, oh no, is this going to be, I don't know where it was going, but do you know what, it's once again another sign of how you can really be in a really bad place, in a really bad situation, and how you can turn that around. So I thought it was great. Do you know what I did think when I was listening to it? I get a lot of people who will contact me and have done over the years to say they're in a bad place, they're in a bad way. And I'll kind of, you know, I can use my own experience, I can use the experience of what I've learned along the way. And I'll always kind of go back to people and say, well, do you know what, it's okay, and it's fine to feel like this, and other people have been in this situation, the situation that you're in, other people have been there, and, you know, you can learn from their experience, come out. And people often will say, no, nobody's been where I am. Nobody's been, I've done bad things, I'm addicted to this, I've, you know, assaulted police officers, things like that. And people will always say, nah, no one's been where I am. And that's why I think it was really important, because it was a different, I think it was a different story to what we've heard on previous Mental Health Mondays. But it was important, because we have to get those voices out there of all these different experiences, and how you can make bad decisions, how you can, you know, you can learn from your mistakes and bring yourself through.
One of the things, and you know, we called Mental Health Monday because we're making a point of the saying that we're talking about mental health. But actually, you know, the last sort of five or six episodes, if you listen back to them now, they're not mental health stories. They are people's stories, aren't they? They are people's lives. And this idea that your life is, you know, first I did this, then I went to B, then I went to point C, and then I went to point D. Actually, it's quite clear. People have got really complicated lives. And actually, quite clearly, you know, your mental health plays a part in that, as does your physical health. And guess what? In between, the two things interact with one another, and that can be the case too. Yeah. Daniel set out, you know, his boxing career that he was trying to get, you know, off the ground. It might have been his big break, but may have taken him in a completely different direction, then fell off a bus. Mm. And then couldn't box, ended up in a wheelchair, you know, and that's not surprising that then that has an impact. But then, arguably, you know, that's happening to people all the time, every day, that they're having knockbacks, that they're having chances that are missed, that they're missing out on opportunities as well. And that's, you know, we do deal with these things mentally, and that's all about mm-hmm. our mental health and understanding that that's a mental health issue and a mental health topic, if you like.
Exactly. It's about building resilience as well and knowing how to deal. Imagine that. Yeah, and we've discussed this before about, for an example, say a sportsman or woman who gets an injury, and suddenly their whole career, the life they planned out, is over. I mean, for anybody to be following a dream and something to happen, or somebody to say, stop now, that's not going to happen, that's a huge blow. And it's about that resilience as a person to be able to know, okay, how can I deal with this? And that's what I really liked about Daniel's story, though, was that it was a conversation I've had this week as well about, you know, following certain kind of expected paths that we're meant to follow, when I know what makes me happy, you know what makes you happy, and Daniel now knows what makes him happy, which is acting. And even when he was trying to explain it, he kind of admitted, you know, nobody really would have expected me to say this, but it made me so happy to be able to hear how he sounds when he's talking about finding that acting and finding that thing that makes him happy and really going for it. And you can hear how proud he is of that career that he's making for himself. And I just think, you know, what a great example of being able to acknowledge what makes him happy and following that.
Yeah, absolutely. You can check out Mental Health Monday via your podcast provider. Just type in Mental Health Monday. It'll come up as the top search there, it being one of, you know, the top mental health podcasts out there. If some would say the top.
Well, yeah. We would probably
us, but we would accept also your star ratings as well.
Yeah, yeah.
On Dad's Hour, I accept everything over 3 stars, but Mental Health Monday, I would like 4 stars and above.
Yeah.
If people want to get involved there. Here's One of the issues that Daniel raised, and this is a wider issue as well, but it takes political decisions and political change and societal change in regard to this. He talked about going to prison or the threat of going to prison, and he spoke about as part of his probation that meant that he didn't go behind bars. He ended up going to see he had a form of counselling to look at the psychology of how he got himself into the situations he got himself into. I pushed him on it a little bit because I almost wanted to get a sense about why that hadn't worked for him, and it was simply quite clearly the case that actually there was no connection between him, a bloke who had gone through this experience, and then the environment that he was then placed in. I wanted to get your take on that one because that's really crucial, that, isn't it? That if we're going to say we can provide opportunities, counselling, psychotherapy services out there, we need to do so in a way which works for different individuals. And not everybody is going to want to walk into a walk-in centre. Not everyone's going to want to walk into, you know, a clinic. Not everybody's going to want to walk into, some sort of social organisation. But there's got to be someone who can make a decision on what is best for those individuals. That somebody who's had a difficult upbringing, who's had a history of abuse in their family, who has nearly gone to prison for, you know, a violent assault against a member of the police staff, but has avoided it. You've then got to say, well, maybe a traditional form of counselling or psychological work might not work. We're going to have to look at something a little bit different. And quite clearly, when he did find it, he found it at a grassroots level with someone who can make a connection with him as an individual, somebody with lived experiences of mental health issues.
Yeah, I couldn't help but wonder when I was listening to how different his story would have been if he would have went to prison. And I think we touched on this maybe last week about prisons and, we know that prison, that there's a lot of people who are inside who don't belong there, who don't need prison. What's that going to do for them? And actually what they need is help with their mental health. If you look at Daniel's story and how he's turned his life around, how he's now the person he is, I don't know him, but from all things that I can gather, a good, responsible person who is living a happy life, not harming anybody, doing what he wants to do, contributing to society the way that he is, then what a great example again of how we can take this different approach. It's not a one-size-fits-all type of approach that we need, and more often than not is actually happening out there. But if you look at how he's turned everything around, would he be the person he is today now if he went to prison? What would that have done to him? What would that have done to him if once he came out of prison?
But that's us as a society, isn't it? Saying actually we can see different pathways for these individuals, because at that point that this guy assaults police officers, you know, if he's on the front page of the Daily Mail, he needs locking up and he needs. But actually, quite clearly, there was a different pathway to him, which would take him down an acting career to the point where, you know, he's having meetings about, you know, writing his own thing, that he's winning awards for, you know, for short films which are being produced and going online. He's creating showreels, that he's meeting celebrity names to be part of like a film. And actually, that pathway was just one of a number of options. But actually, it almost feels like there's a system at the moment where there's not a will to open those options out to those individuals.
Yeah, but isn't
that's not at the expense of like victims of crime and things like that by any stretch. No.
But isn't the case of Daniel better for society as a whole anyway? And that's what we're saying, and that's what we picked on last week, and I've carried that conversation on as well, about that whole idea of people on probation, people who are leaving prisons without any support, without anything, they're being locked up. And then they're being sent back out into the world with no channels of knowing what to do, where to go, how to get help. And that's why that it's a vicious cycle. They just end up back in prison. And that's what I mean, as in Daniel's case, as a society, it's not better for us that look at the person he's turned into.
Absolutely. People can check out Daniel's story as well. It was a really interesting character as well. And, you know, the stuff that he's working on now is really interesting. A lot of it, I think, as well, came from his own self-confidence to say, I want to do something different. And there must be loads of people in all kinds of different lines of work, different parts of society who are going along with the status quo or what is perceived of what might be expected of them, that they almost accept that that's the way that life is going to be. And yet eventually he was able to do that thing where he could say, I want to try this acting thing. And actually, that's a brave choice too, isn't it? To actually say, I'm going to say something which actually you might laugh at, but I'm going to say it anyway because I feel the need to say it and I feel strongly enough about that. And there must be people, you know, in jobs now, there must be people in family environments, people who are in, you know, unhappy marriages where they feel like they can't say anything because they feel like changing the status quo would be too much of a deal or too much of a challenge personally to deal with.
Yeah, it's strange because I have had that conversation this morning actually about how, as I said, you know what makes you happy and why are we denying ourselves that opportunity of being happy and doing what we like to do because it's that expectation, the status quo, we don't want to rock the boat. And, you know, everybody should take their opportunity in life to make it what they want to do and follow the kind of the path they want to live. And that's going to impact on your mental health if you're just sticking to the status quo and hating it. You're going to a job you don't like. I've had this a conversation again recently with somebody who said they can feel themselves getting depressed and they know that it's the job and they were asking advice, if I just leave my job, is that going to be the end of it? And obviously it's not as simple as that, but I do think living that kind of, you know, you spend more time in work than you do outside of it, so you might as well be doing something that you enjoy and that makes you feel good. But yeah, no, it's interesting. And what you just said there just reminded me of one of my favourite jokes as well. I think it was Bob Monkhouse, I think, actually. And he said, everybody laughed when I told them I want to be a comedian, but they're not laughing now, are they?
That is a very good
that
joke.
That is good.
But it's that thing, isn't it, where people go, oh, I'd always wanted to do that, but I couldn't do it. But that idea that if you were to say, well, what if it goes wrong? But then if you're to change that on its head and just go, but what if it goes right?
Exactly. And also, I think I'd say it's a defeatist attitude. Maybe that's a little bit harsh, but it's this idea of this is what I want and I can't have it right now. So it's not going to happen. It's about making plans. It's about making the right moves, taking the small steps before you can actually reach those bigger steps. But it's moving in the right direction, having a plan, knowing what you want to do and go for it. Everybody should do that.
You mentioned the case of, you know, if I quit this job, will things get better? There's a piece in the Guardian written by a journalist called Callum Marsh, and he's talking about a restaurant worker in Ontario, Canada, and he gets a 90-minute commute from his home in Ontario to work in downtown Toronto. He does 12 hours a day, basically gets home, drinks a cup of coffee, and then passes out. He was living with atypical anorexia. He was going full circle 12 hours a day, and talks about the environment that he had within the kitchen as well, saying it was a bad place to be. The food industry, he said, is notorious for his bro attitude of pushing things to the back of your mind. You're expected to put your head down, stop complaining, and just do your job. He no longer works in the kitchen, and he says he's sharing those stories from a million restaurant workers currently sitting in the dark who don't even know what's going on with them. He says the stigma in the food industry around mental illness is still a problem as well, and a stigma that for many chefs and restaurant owners has become a health crisis at the gravest urgency as well. Talking about that as a different point of view, that's within the food industry. There must be industries out there right across the board where these things are big factors.
Yeah, I think food industry is a big one as well. If you imagine being a chef in a popular busy restaurants, what downtime do you have? What break do you have? You're going into this environment which is so full on, and I'm aware that it is an issue as well. I've spoken to a few people who've expressed concerns about it. Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that one as well. But that piece is a Callum Marsh piece in there. And The Guardian, which has gone live today. What have you been working on with Chasing the Stigma this week, Jake?
So actually, we are going to be at Lymph this weekend. So we were pushing out there's actually just a public service announcement. Actually, we were made aware of an issue with Android devices for the Hub of Hope app, which is now fixed. So if you do have it and you haven't got the update, please go on and get that update for that. But yeah, we're going to be at Lymph this weekend spreading the awareness of how to signpost to help using the Hub of Hope and mental health awareness and just getting our message out there.
Excellent stuff. And what have you got coming up in the next few weeks?
Oh, I've got some really exciting stuff, but I'll tell you the next few weeks.
Is this the thing you've told me and I'm not allowed to say?
Yeah. And more.
But it is good.
It's very good. But I don't want to jinx it. And I don't think I'm allowed to say anyway. So I hate people who say stuff like what I've just said. That's like putting a status online and being like, inbox me, hun.
Yeah, but you know when people say, oh, yeah, I was going to bring, like, if you go, oh, has anyone got any biscuits? And then someone go, oh, I was going to bring biscuits today. Yeah. Did you bring biscuits?
No. Or presents, and someone said, do you know what I was going to get you? But I didn't know whether you'd like it or not. Of course I would like that. That's the best. Why didn't you get me? So, yeah. So, Soz, inbox me, hun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your time. It's World Emoji Day today.
It is.
So just before we go, what's your favourite emoji?
My most overused one is the lying on the side, crying, laughing face, which I think is too much. I don't think anyone should have to use that, but I've overused it now. So now if I just do a normal laughing, crying face, I feel like it's not enough.
Yeah, sometimes people do the same emoji multiple times. Like the equivalent of putting an exclamation mark on the end of it.
Yeah.
Like sideways, crying, laughing. 8 times.
Yeah.
Nothing's that funny.
No, I don't even think anything's funny to do it once, but I'm the 8 times guy.
Hashtag 8 times. Jake Mills, thank you for your time from Chasing the Stigma. If you want to find out more information about mental health services close to where you are, head to the Hub of Hope, hubofhope.co.uk. And the once glitchy Android app is now working fully again. Just make sure you
got the update
as well for Hub of Hope as well. Look for that on iOS and on Android. Mental Health Extra is back next week as part of Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the Stigma.
Radio City Talk.